Hi everyone, welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 228 for June 17th, 2019. If you have not had a chance to take a look at today's report yet, it is number 299, which you should be seeing on your screen right now while I'm talking. If you would like to get a copy for yourself, just go to timingresearch.com/reports, and you can access either the web or PDF version there. We are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, but you can also listen to the audio-only podcast version of all episodes now on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Just search for Timing Research and subscribe. My name is David Kosmeter. I'm the creator of Timing Research. And today I have arranged for Marina Villatoro, Michael Guess, Andrew Keen, and Jim Kenny to moderate. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Jim.
Okay. Thanks for being here, everybody. And before we get started, we're just going to go around the horn and have everybody announce who they are, what their firm is, and a little bit about what you guys do. We'll start out with Michael. Michael, what's the firm and what are you guys doing there?
Thanks for the intro. My name is Michael Guess, President and CEO of DayTradeSafe.com. I create mechanical trading systems and coaching services. Been doing this for about 20 years and mainly focus on trend following mechanical day trading systems.
Okay, sounds great. And we'll get into a lot of stuff with you later in the broadcast, Michael. Hey, Marina, one more time, could you explain what you guys are doing down there and some of the systems you're working with?
Sure, thanks for having me. My name is Marina Villatoro, the trader chick. I am an expat living in Guatemala. And main focus is futures, the E-minis. That's my number one love, I guess you could say, but I do enjoy stocks, especially for long term. What I focus on mainly is, besides trading the E-mini, is helping other simplify. I have a simplified course that I help with the E-minis, and also just for beginners. I really love working with beginner traders and helping them get started. So thanks again for having me.
Okay, thanks, Marina. And listeners of the broadcast have obviously run into this guy before, alphasharks.com, guys. And this is Andrew. Andrew, give a little background on what you're up to nowadays.
Yeah, Andrew Keen, CEO of alphashark.com. I was a floor trader at the Chicago Board Options Exchange for 10 years. I started my company about 8.5 years ago. I'm a big option guy, so I watch institutional order flow in the option market, and then I react on that. So I trade 95% of my stuff is option-based, and we run a live trading room. We have subscriptions, we have education, and indicators as well.
Okay, great. I'm Jim Kenny, president of the optionprofessor.com, and I'm going to be moderating today. We're going to go over the questions that were asked the crowd forecast news report 299. And the first question is, which direction do you think the S&P 500 will move from this coming Monday's open until Friday's close? We've got obviously a big Fed meeting here that a lot of people are betting both ways. So it should be a very interesting week. We're going to start with ladies first. Marina, why don't you let us know what you're thinking for this week?
Yeah, Marina, you're muted.
Hi, Marina? Sorry about that. Yeah, can you hear me now?
Okay. Yeah. And you heard the question, right?
Yes, I heard everything. Sorry about that. Okay. So what I start looking at is, this is the SPY, the ES, or the index, I guess, of the S&P 500. And what I'm looking at is that it's been kind of sitting in a pretty crappy area back and forth for quite some time. And as you can see right now, what I'm looking at, that it's hit this massive resistance area. And it tried to go down. It had this FOBO, which is like a fake out breakout. And now it continued back on, and it doesn't seem to want to break through this area that has been revisited for quite a few times already. So my prediction, I don't really want to say prediction, but I feel that at the moment, it's just going to be bouncing up and down, especially in the summer months. Also, I do look at the news and what is happening this particular week. And because we have FOMC coming out this particular week, that makes it even more indecisive. So I personally would kind of just sit back and watch what's happening. I think it's just going to sit hitting that resistance area, maybe going down a little bit, but basically just in indecision until the FOMC really comes out. And maybe on Thursday, we'll see some better moves. So that's my, although Friday we have FOMC again. So you know what? This week looks like a big indecision for me personally. Yeah, they'll be staying in China.
I mean, this is not you know, anything other than your opinion of up or down, because basically going sideways wasn't one of the choices. So if you were guessing what we're doing, would you say
it's probably go down
higher or lower? Down?
Lower. Yes. Lower. Sorry about that. Okay. Yeah.
Sounds good. Let's switch over to Michael. Michael, this is a pretty much of a binary question here. Do you think the market will move up or down here between now and Friday's close?
Okay. Let me make sure I am choosing the right one to share. Okay. And I'm going to switch to my charts. Let me make sure you can see them. Are you able to see a basic chart here? Give me a yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
All right. Because myself and my students primarily trade the minis, this is the ES rather than an index itself. This is something that I think more properly represents things. Also, instead of a straight up daily chart, I am looking at the daytime trading session from 8:30 to 3:15 pit time in Chicago. So that's 405 minutes duration up here. And it's going to look very much like Marina showed you. This is not as far back, but as you can see, she's right. We're at a resistance level here, and that's from a previous pivot, which was back on. Let's see if I can get a data box here. Hang on real quick. Here we go. This is May the 16th was the most recent swing high pivot, and that's running right through what we are just threading the needle. So I know you're going to press me and say up or down. It's got to be a binary thing. I'm going to make a case for why I think it might be going down, and I'll show you why. I'm going to drop down to what I consider swing trader entry points, smaller multiples that divide into 405. A 135 is the next biggest divisible. And as you can see, that's the same peak that we had on the daily, and there is the sideways action. We're in that trading range right there. If we drill down to the next smaller 181 real quick, you can see more of the same. But here's what I'm noticing, a lower swing high, but that's offset by a higher swing low. So we're coiling up, essentially. I don't want to drop into a 27, but my sense is that it's going to, of course, depend on the Fed. But if the Fed were not in play, I would say I think it's going to head down. Last time I was on the show a few weeks ago, I said it was going to head down, and it went down strongly. So I don't know whether I'll be right this time or not. That's my bid.
Yeah, and I don't want you to have to make a call up or down. I'm just reading the question as it's written. So I realize, and everyone can see, that the market is kind of range bound right now with a very big event happening. So obviously this is a tough week to call up or down when you're in the smack middle of something. And obviously it could be very headline oriented. But Andrew, he loves binary questions. So what do you think, Andrew? Are we going up or down?
I am one of the few affiliated educators for Nadex, which is a binary exchange, but I probably haven't placed a trade on that platform in over a year. So one thing I like to look at is I like to look at the SPY straddle just to see how much the movement is implying by looking at the option market. If I looked at the June 21st at the money straddle, it's implying a basically $4 move. So the S&P is basically SPY is about a tenth of S&P 500 futures. So they're implying that the market's going to move 40 points this week, either to the upside or the downside. If I had to choose, I don't think they cut rates this week, but I think they talk about some hawkish language, which will make the market go a little bit higher. I agree that we're kind of range bound over the last 6 days. VIX is surprisingly up on a Monday. That could just be the Monday effect. I will say higher with a very weak convection of about 55%.
Okay. And that's the next question. So you're about 55% of confidence level on that.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And just quickly, confidence level, Marina, on possibly lower by the end of the week?
Oh, 100%. I don't know how much lower, but I definitely believe it's going lower. It's going to hit that resistance area and head back down until we have direction. Yeah, definitely.
And Michael, what are you looking at percentage-wise?
Well, I don't have a high degree of confidence. You know, it's possible with the summer doldrums, we could stay range bound, but what with the Fed and the always possibility of a tweet storm, things could go either way, but I'm going to still lean towards down, and I'm going to say about 55 to 60% confidence.
Yeah. As far as the crowd is concerned, which way we're going this week, it was 57% up and 42% down, and the confidence level was pretty much the same on both, right around 60, 65%. So that's the way the polling went as far as that's concerned. Third question we have here, give me a second here, and Yeah, as far as trade management, we'll skip to number four. I'll come back to three. As far as trade management, what do you guys like to do as far as, you know, giving some, you know, parameters onto a transaction? You know, stop scaling in or out? You know, how do you manage your trade, I guess, once you put one on? Marina, can you give us some insight on your feelings there?
Sure. Just checking that I'm not muted. I'm not. Okay. So normally, because I also look at the E-mini, I'm very, very intro day, I would be watching more for really smaller moves, probably within 1 point or more. But I'm also, what I do look for, first of all, before I start, is the width of the channel, and it looks pretty wide. So then I would be looking for micro moves. And in this case, I would need to see some serious bounce off of this resistance area for me to even consider. At the moment, I would be taking the position of sitting out rather than entering. But if I do, I always put in 1 point risk, 1 point entry, with a scout move. I like the quick moves, one-to-one risk. That's usually my biggest hits. And I would be looking to go short for sure.
And do you do anything with scaling in or scaling out? Like if you put a one lot on or five lot on, whatever, do you add at a certain point, or are you kind of just riding whatever you've got?
So if I was to go in with a few contracts, which here I probably only do two or three at most because it's pretty aggressive. I'm quite conservative when it comes to that. I would do my first one always is 1 point, always. And then once it hits that, I immediately put in my to the second profit, which is 2 points. However, I immediately move the stop loss to break even. So no matter what happens, if I retrace, I only lose on the commission and nothing else. So yeah, that's how I always do it. Trail stops. And then moving and scaling upward for the profits, definitely.
Okay. Hey, Michael, what's your take on how you manage your trades after you put them on and how you get into them, how you get out of them? Do you go in all at one time? Do you scale in? Do you scale out? How basically do you approach these things?
All right. Did I share my screen?
Right now you're sharing your face.
No, you're not.
So you are seeing charts actively?
No screen, no charts coming up just yet.
Okay, so. Let me try again. I'm going to click on screen share.
And you got to click on the chart, right?
All right, let's try it again. Let's see if that works. Are you able to see the charts now?
Yep.
All right, great. I'm going to simply start by saying I don't use a one-size-fits-all approach. The whole point of a mechanical system like the TradeSafe system is to adapt to whatever the market can give you day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute. Long story short, I am looking for my, on the minis, the 9 minute to be in a trend. In this case, the 9 minute is not in a trend. It's in congestion. The 3 minute isn't in a trend. The 1 minute is breaking out. But if I had, using a simple rhyme, the one and the three need to agree, best as if all three agree, I would use a scale out because I would have a lot of wind at my back and I would scale out at a quick and easy target. And I would then trail an automated stop with this system, letting the system take me out of the trade. Sorry, my computer's talking to me, telling me what to do. If I had only weak trend agreement, only the one in the three agree, whether I entered on the 1 minute chart or on one of those tick charts on the right, I would probably use a scalp and just go all in, all out at a quick and easy to reach target, typically one ATR of a 1 minute bar.
Okay. All right. And Andrew, any kind of insight onto your managing trade, getting in, getting out, and you know, scaling in or scaling out, stop losses, whatever?
Yeah. So for the most part, I've realized that it's really hard to short the market because the market historically goes up a lot more than goes down. And it can go down really fast. Like we saw the S&P sell off from 2960 down to 2720. I'll look right back 160 points. So I would like to hear more about Marina's conviction that 100% chance we go down this week, because that's the strongest thing I've ever heard. But basically, I trade options. So when I don't sell options naked ever, calls or puts. So when I buy an option, I know how much I can lose on it. I do scale into longer data positions, like if I have September positions or October or January 2011. But the most part, I am usually long. I'm long right now. Every time I try to get short, I lose money because since 2008, you can't be short ever.
Yeah, the market does have resilience. And lately, it has a lot of resilience. You know, you got moving averages still inverted to the upside, so you got that working for you. And money flows into these ETFs this week. I guess we're suggesting that we were going to have an up week from the ETF flows from last week. So there's so many different things to look at now, and then you got the Fed, so it's kind of tough. Hey, if we went back to number three here, And you just brought it up, Andrew. Everyone has a reason why they had an opinion, right? So let's go back to Marina, and she can explain a little bit more about what she's looking at that would compel her to think lower is the best way to go.
Hi. Okay, just to make sure that you guys hear me. Okay, I'm good. So I look at small, very small movements. I don't like to say, oh, it's going to go short for a long time. I look at quick movements, 1 point usually. I usually look at my Ninja Trader. If I turn it on, I don't have enough strength to show you here. So that's why I'm using my TD Ameritrade ones right now. So when I say go lower, yeah, I totally believe it is not, it's probably going to hit, be stuck here and head down. It is in this channel. So for the quick future, I guess, I'm going to be looking mainly to short it out until I actually believe it's going to even hit to about here. So there's quite a good range for me as far as what I look at, not long term or not, oh, the whole week, as in today, tomorrow. Well, today it's almost finished. So tomorrow. Yeah, that's why I say 100% for me, we're talking 1 or 2 points in the E-mini ratio. So yes, that's why I believe in that, because the FOMC is so indecisive and there's so little movement going on that people tend to kind of just stagger back and forth, which is really good for the scalping moves in that respect. But not for the long
term. Yeah, and I think your conviction is even more shorter term than the end of the week. So when you were saying your feelings 100%, the time frame is really not, you know, talking about Friday as much, because your trading is not worried about Friday. It's worried about the next, 30 minutes or something, right?
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, exactly. So in the next 30 minutes,
I think Andrew misinterpreted your time zone. Although the question has to do with Friday, the way you play ball is very much micro from that, and Friday's an eternity to you at this point.
Yeah, especially with two FOMC meetings, it's beyond eternity. So yeah, you got it.
Exactly. Right. And everyone's got their own style. Some are doing position trading, some are doing swing trading, you know, all types of trading. Yours is obviously extremely on the short-term side. And so, you know, when somebody asks you what's going to happen next week, next month, or the end by Friday, it's really not on your radar based on the kind of trading you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. Yeah. And now Andrew's clear on why you made that comment. Okay, Michael, you've got reasonings behind yours, and I'm sure they're very sound, so why don't you share them with us?
All right. I hope I'm showing the charts again. Let me know. Are they there?
Oh, yeah. You're
right,
good.
Great. I'm actually with Marina. I am not a person who tries to rely on a crystal ball or whatever variety of longer term things are. That's really swing trading. I'm a pure day trader. So consequently, for example, this morning, before this event, we've already had six or seven setups, of which I got six winners, and they were up, they were down, and it had to do on trend agreement among the charts. Therefore, your probability is going to be much higher because you're not trying to reach out too far into the unknown. So I really don't actually care what the Fed is going to do. I just let the news settle down. And if the market is trending and I get all my conditions met, I'll take the trade.
Yeah, because you guys are following the charts on a very short-term basis. So like today we opened up at, say, 28.90 on the actual cash S&P. And it runs up to 29.97. That could be a trade for you. And now we're back to 28.93 or whatever. And that could be another trade to the downside for you.
Yeah, whatever the trend, and I use specific metrics to determine the trend, not higher highs and higher lows and stuff like that.
Right.
If I have trend agreement among those cycles-based charts, then I will only look to trade in the direction of the trend agreement.
Now, since I'm not 100% familiar with everything you're doing, and probably everyone else isn't either, can you explain the dotted lines a little bit more and what the green
these
versus the
are,
red?
These golden green dots are nothing more than pivots or swings for support or resistance, and they're plotted automatically. What I look for example, I'm going to maximize a 9-minute real fast. I don't want to take up the other presenter's time. As you can see, and I'm on the NASDAQ, not on the ES. We gapped up from Friday's close. We had a nice rally here. And during that rally, while we were in an uptrend, as you can see, the color down below is green, I was looking for a trend agreement. And you can see the color was green on the 3-minute chart. So as long as I had trend agreement on those and the 1-minute chart, which is where I was looking for trades, or the tick charts, then I would be looking for your classic pullback. I mean, that's as old as dirt, except it's very metrically based. And, you know, you're either going to make a little bit or a lot more. For example, you could make a lot more with the trailing stop right here, and this is automated. Right here, I would have used a scalp. And I do take into account whether there's support or resistance around. That's what these horizontal lines are. They're just markers on the roadmap to let me know if I'm really going to be dealing with a lot of what I call contextual variables that are outside the mechanics of the system.
And is the red and blue line, are those some type of moving averages, or what are those lines doing?
Yeah, they're moving averages. I utilize two of the moving averages are one of two methods to determine trend direction. One is based on a break of support or resistance with follow through. The other is a classic moving average crossover, but again, with very specific conditions being met. These colored rectangles are automatically plotted by the software, and they will plot when you're in congestion. So as you can see, this chart right here is in congestion. So is this chart. That one is not. It's in an uptrend.
And just to give you an idea, like when the bars are green, you'd want to basically have some type of a long position. And when they go to red, you either liquidate or reverse?
Well, because it's automated, once you're in the trade, you don't have to do anything.
Oh, I see. I see. But this is something that might kick in a trade when they go green and when they go red, right?
Yeah. You're going to, for example, if you look on this chart right here, this off-red color is saying, hey, that's a downtrend for that period of time. I'll just maximize it real quick. And when it's blank, that means, no, we had no trend. As you can see, these little phantom outlines of previous congestion rectangles that correspond. That was no trend. Now we had a downtrend, no trend, downtrend, no trend, uptrend, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Like many systems, if the market gets extremely choppy, it's a difficult environment. If it goes into a more of a trending environment, you can make a pretty good score.
That's the whole idea. We want to filter out everything except the highest probability when you have persistent trending.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. I get it. And I hope everybody else who's listening got it a little bit better. I think those questions could have been helpful to people who, you know, are not 100% familiar with your system.
Great.
Okay, let's turn it over to Andrew, who has been watching these markets for decades now. Andrew, is it?
16 years. Yeah, 16.
All right. Well, you're getting to second decade. That ain't bad. And, you know, what kind of reasonings do you have about how you're feeling about the market right now? Like, what are some, in other words, you know, I might be looking at the 3 and the 10 year inverting for the last month, and I see that as a longer term negative, or the VIX can't get under 15 might be a little bit of a negative. But the fact that we can't get under the moving averages is a positive. So, you know, what type of, you know, things are in your soup?
In my soup is that the U.S. stock market is the biggest Ponzi scheme in the world, and that the market will just continue to go to higher for eternity because there's more aggressive buyers and sellers. There's no such thing as a short hedge fund. You can have a short bias hedge fund. But if you have a marketplace where there's more people buying, you have mutual funds, pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds, 401ks, the market's always going to go higher. So I've, like I said, my best years of my trading career was 2007, 2008. I wish we'd turn into a bear market. We could have every catastrophe in the world, and if we just continue to not go lower. I truly believe in the plunge protection team that just buys S&P when it goes down enough. I think of all the badness in the world. I think about interest rates. But you know, interest rates being at, you know, 2% on the 10-year or whatever, 2.2%, you got to think about it. You got to put money in stocks because you're not getting any interest rate. With after inflation, you're actually losing money. So I will continue to be long. Maybe one day when we break the 200-day moving average, make lower lows, lower highs, I'll try to play the short side again. But it hasn't been effective since 2008. So that's kind of my ideal system.
Yeah, well, I mean, the majority of the moves have been to the upside. Obviously, there's been some very sharp pullbacks along the way sometimes, you know. But yeah, obviously, every dip that has been bought has been obviously the way to go. Some of the things like the transportation average and the Russell, which seem to be really lagging, and then that inversion of the yield curve and the fact that the Fed has stopped raising rates and are going into an easing phase. The last two times they did that, it was not really good for stocks. Are you putting that anywhere on your radar, or are you just going to wait for these moving averages to tell you when the party's over?
I mean, if you think about it, like I am a big CNBC guy, and I watch a lot of it. And, you know, they have to basically get viewership. So they just make up something to make people watch, you know, like in December,
In early December, they were talking about corporations having the biggest buyback in history and how the market was going to end rally through the end of the year. Then we all know what happened in December, and all we did was sell off. Then they talk about in your yield curve being 100% determination of a recession. Well, I don't think it's going to end like that. So, you know, you think about it, and, you know, I always tell my subscribers and my customers, if you're, you know, if you're trading and losing money, you're probably watching too much TV or reading too many articles. The only thing that's worth something in the world is the supply-demand curve between buyers and sellers. More aggressive buyers, price goes higher. More aggressive sellers, price goes lower. And we continue to just see more aggressive buyers coming into the market. And I can make a case to be short, but I like making money, and you can't make money to the short side as of today. And I mean, yeah, you could have got the S&P, you could have shorted it on all-time highs in the reversal day when it got to 29.61 and closed on the low of the day, but you would have been pretty lucky there. I mean, if you were shorting any time in the last 10 days, you lost, because the market, S&P has rallied 160 points for no rhyme or reason. I think we will get a deal done with China. I think we rally on that news. I think when they initially cut rates, we're going to rally on that news. And I think the market, you know, takes out all-time highs. And I don't want to sit here and just say that I'm a bull, because at heart, I'm the biggest bear in the world. I'm just a realist, and you can't short this market. You have to be so perfect on your timing to short this market. Go short beyond me. Good luck with it. You know, it's not going to happen.
Now, are you using the cloud at all during your charting, and are you using that as part of your decision making?
You know, I am a big Ichimoku cloud proponent, and we saw on the daily chart in the S&P, it broke the cloud to the downside. And then if you pull it out on the weekly chart or the daily chart, the monthly chart, I mean, my chart's up. Yeah, my chart's up. So on the daily chart, we did see the cloud break to the downside. And I would normally take something like that, but I use like a triple confirmation system. And on the weekly, we're still above. I'm sure on the monthly, we're still above too. I can't even go to the monthly because I don't have it here. But it did break to the downside on the daily. And last time it broke to the downside on the daily, if you shorted anything here, probably would have lost money. I mean, you had to have a perfect exit. So I wouldn't take the breakout to the upside. You know, I would rather be buying above all-time highs than buying here. But like I said, the last, since 2009, basically 10 years, I played to the short side probably 4 to 6 times. I got my face ripped off. So it's got to be long.
How about the Russell? Can you throw the Russell up there and see what the cloud looks like on it?
If you know the ticker, I don't really trade the Russell.
I know on the stock exchange is RUT. Do you have a
rut. I think it's a rut, yeah. Okay, so on the daily, it is under the cloud. So obviously that's underperforming. Broke the cloud to the downside at around 1524. So we're at 1536. I mean, the RSI, I do use RSI a little bit. RSI got down to about 30. And that's where we reversed. So, I mean, if I had to choose, I mean, you could say we're in a no man's land between 1610 and 1450. I mean, I could also see the S&P hanging out in this range for the rest of the year. I think 15 of the last 16 pre-election years has been bullish, and we're in a pre-election year because the election is next year. It has been a bullish year, but we also started the year, you know, we have a lot to go down if we wanted to have a negative year. We opened this year at about 2,500. So we have 400 points to the upside.
Oh yeah. It's a low bar. It's a low bar to not have a positive year this year. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So one last one. Could you put up the transportation average, DJTA?
Give a ticker.
And see what that looks like. I'm just trying to see what the cloud is telling you on these things, because, you know, the cloud can be pretty accurate.
I am along some calls in Beezer, but I actually do a lot of real estate too, and there's home prices across the United States are getting crushed. I have buddies in San Diego. They said that's the highest inventory they've ever seen since like 10 years. I know my parents live in the suburbs of Chicago. Their housing prices are going down. This is actually a very weak looking chart. I don't trade this. I've actually never traded this before. A little dead cat bounce. It got under, you know, RSI got under to about 20, and then we bounced. I'd rather be shorting it here than being long.
Yeah. The transports, you know, obviously it can be some kind of an indicator where the S&P is going, and also the Russell 2000 stocks, pretty broad range. So it gives you a little bit of an idea of what might be behind the curtain, and one index that might be inordinately up may catch up, or there could be some obviously backing forth on that. With regards to Marina, was there any individual, we were talking about the S&P and all that, and I think we've already covered the S&P pretty good. Marina, do you have any particular markets outside the S&P, either an individual stock or an individual market that you're seeing something in that you'd like to share?
I love IPOs, which I think I mentioned before. So I've been watching a lot of that. I did get into quite a few IPOs that I've been trusting the companies with. But I would like to, I don't know, for my own personal curiosity, what is happening with Beyond Meat? This is one of those companies I've been watching because I'm just so curious. I mean, it's just gone up like 500%, but there's absolutely no rhyme or reason to it. And similar
you have
to
a chart, you have a chart you can share with us on Beyond Meat that you can throw up there while you're talking. Yeah.
hang on a second.
Yeah.
Oops. Okay. So I'm not sharing my screen, right? Let me share my screen really fast. Yeah. I'm just fascinated with this company. So this is, I'm not in the right style here. And Beyond Meat is a new company here. Here we go. It's completely new. The IPO just, I think, was out like a month and a half ago. But it started off, it's at 160. It's not even showing me everything here. The 1 year chart, which is probably, yeah. Okay. Well, you can kind of get a quick idea. So it opened out around 20 and then it's just been hitting, ridiculous highs. There's absolutely no reason for any of this. And I've just been fascinated with this because to me, Beyond Meat, I'm really into disruptive companies. Like I really love Lyft and Uber. I know that they're right now kind of controversial and this and that. Those are my long-term investments. I mean, I'm looking at holding that for like 10 years. But Beyond Meat is also relatively a disruptive market. It's a 100% vegan company that sells meat that is obviously vegan, but it supposedly tastes similar to it. But it's just blasted. So honestly, if you know the other participants would like to chime in, not so much on this particular stock as much as this is just absurd. There's no reasoning to it. And I've been pressing to get in
here. Evaluation is definitely very, very high. And obviously, it's the float has a lot to do with it. And so there's technical factors that make these things go long outside the fundamentals. Michael, yeah. were there any particular markets outside of the S&P that you use your system for that you could share a chart on and we could actually get an idea of another market that you're applying your system to?
Well, it'll work on any trending market, but I'm going to go on the record as saying, since I probably go back further than anybody else in the room, I was one of the original SOS traders back in the day. I have to wait for my computer to stop talking. It interrupts sometimes. I learned pretty quickly and have found out that where the stock market is concerned, auto routing is a big deal if you're a pure day trader, which is what I am.
Exactly.
I do not swing trade. And right. If you got to deal with Archipelago, black pools, co-locating servers and things like that, plus all the spoofing that goes on, I pretty much stay away from the stock market, believe it or not. For the small retail trader, if you really want consistency, I've found that the world of futures and commodities is probably the last bastion of pure trading capitalism that's safe. Now, I disqualify the ES because when I started trading the ES when it came out in November of 97, it was perfect. But by 2000 or 2001, there was so much liquidity, the institutions were coming in and pretty much wrecking a good thing. So I don't recommend the ES. You'll get opportunities, but not as many without the problems of spoofing, algorithmic high frequency program trading and stuff that you will find.
Okay.
I have to keep interrupting.
I was wondering, Michael, you mentioned the commodity sector. The winds of change appear to be blowing in the grain market as well as in the metals market. Could you throw any charts up on either of those two areas? And we can at least see what the trends and what you're seeing are looking like there.
I really wouldn't be able to at the moment, but I will tell you this much.
Sure.
I personally recommend if you're going to be, for example, in the energy complex, don't try to trend follow crude oil. It's a sexy market, but it breaks out and it fakes out. Same thing is true in the metals for gold. If you really want something that has nice, smooth trending in the energy complex, then you would want to trade natural gas. Naturally, currencies have inherent trendiness. So the 6E, the euro, would be a recommendation. The remaining three indexes, the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the Russell, would be my recommendation.
Well, you know, the relationship between stocks and commodities are at a 50-year low. So that gives you a little bit of an idea on the sellout that we've seen in the commodity sector. Natural gas is at 2 and change, which is a very low number. And are there any other commodities that you think might be a little on the oversold side that maybe in a 6 to 12 month horizon might be a good value down here?
Well, pretty much I specialize most of the time in the minis. I was a bean trader as a day trader for a while. I'm not so sure that the liquidity is what I would want for the size that I like to trade. Okay. So that might be a candidate. But other than that, I pretty much stick to the indices.
I got you. Yeah, the beans went down to 8-9 area. And then, of course, they're getting subsidies, tremendous subsidies from the government. And then, of course, that's going to be a key to the China deal because they've really cut back their buying of our grain. So, do you, just outside looking at it as an opinion, do you see 10, 11, 12 on beans, or do you see range bound between 8 and 10?
It's going to look range bound for the time being and maybe drop unless, as Andrew said, he's hoping for some trade agreement. If that comes through, boy, watch everything take off. Of course, Washington can come through one more time with another subsidy, in which case, then great. That's, you know, padding the price.
Andrew, are you following any of the commodities at all? Are you in Chicago or not in Chicago now?
No, I'm in Scottsdale. I'm in Scottsdale right now. But
a little warmer, a little drier than Chicago, right?
Well, I'm actually like in New York, but then I keep going to weather and the weather report, and it rains every day. So I'm like, why would I be there? So. I'll make a couple comments here. I'm long gold, and I'm long gold for eternity. That's like my personal account. I'm long Bitcoin. I've been long Bitcoin, higher, lower, probably around here. I'm long cryptos for eternity too.
Quick question. What's your feeling on Libra?
Is that the Facebook thing?
Yeah.
I don't really have a feeling. Like, I mean, if anybody can do it, I think they can do it. And I think they're doing a crypto to basically to prevent a lot of the issues that Facebook has going down right now. And right. I was trying to run Facebook ads through Facebook, and my S Corp, Alpha Shark, is a DBA of my S Corp, and I can't even run ads because my DBA doesn't line up with my S Corp. So they're really cutting back, but that could really hurt their revenues. But I think they're doing these cryptos things for privacy and security. So I think it's gonna be a long-term play. I'll make a comment about the IPO market. And if you look at like Lyft and Uber, they lose money. I mean, Lyft loses like $1 billion, and I don't know how anybody would ever invest in that long term, because I don't think they can turn it around. They literally, every time you take a Lyft, they lose money on every single Lyft that they take. At the Beyond Meat market, I'm going to show something that's really cool right here. So, you know, I'm a big option guy. So if you just look, so let's say Beyond Meat's like 170 right here. And there's something that's known as a reversal conversion. Okay. So if you look at Beyond Meat and say for argument's sake, it's 170, you can see here how the puts are $16 higher than the calls on the same strike, same expiration. That just basically tells you that, so it should be even. The calls and the puts should be the same. That shows you how hard to borrow it is. So I have never shorted it. I don't even know if you can short it, but basically if you wanted to short Beyond Meat for till July, so till July expiration, it's going to cost you $16 to short it. So this could be another reason why the market's going higher in it. I think Beyond Meat eventually is done for, because they've proven a concept with nothing proprietary based behind it. You know, I'm also a certified nutritionist, and they came up with a vegetarian burger or sausages. But the big thing that they have that other people don't have is they have no soy in it. Soy is really bad for you because it's one of the top five GMOs in the world. But on the token, as the point I want to make, if you want to short Beyond Meat, it's going to cost you 10% for a month, for 32 days. So, you know, if you look to trade the options and Beyond Meat, it's crazy because none of these reversal conversions line up. And the reason for that, because it's on such a hard short borrow. So if we look at the January 2020 options, the puts are $45 more than the calls. So it's going to cost me $45 to short it to January. So if you're looking to play that one, I think it's going to be on me, done for. It might take a couple of years. Tyson's going to compete against them. They just hit a new 52-week high, and they've proven a concept, but they have nothing proprietary behind it.
You know, one thing about the IPO market, if you did want to get on a sell side of it, it might be wise to wait to see when the lockup period ends. Because when the lockup ends, then you have a pretty good idea that there'll be a ton of supply coming out, because these people who got it for beans, you know, they may want to lock in some profit. So if you look at all the IPOs, find out when the lockup period ends, which is basically when insiders and people who got it that have handcuffs on can start selling it. That would be the more appropriate time to look at the sell side, from the standpoint of knowing that there'll probably be some selling after the lockup period comes due. What do you think about that, Andrew?
Well, I'm very fascinated by IPOs as well. And I do a ton of backtesting and historical data in my spare time. And I try to find a strategy for IPOs. And I think it was like 80 to 85% of all IPOs get back to their initial IPO price within, I think it's like 3 months. We know Facebook did. The rare ones are probably like LinkedIn, Google, Beyond Meat, Chewy just IPO'd, but most of them actually do sell off initially. And then eventually they do go higher. I mean, here's another one. It looks like Blue Apron might've done a reverse split to make people believe it's actually a real company. But Blue Apron, what did IPO got up to $4. That's even on the daily chart. I think it got higher. Then it went down to 55 cents. It lost 90% of its value. So I think there is, you know, Uber went down to 35 and then it eventually came back to its IPO price. It went to all-time highs above 45 the other day. So most IPOs go back to the original under their IPO price. I think it's within the first like 30 or 60 days. I would love to see some historical data of IPOs that are, you know, 60% plus because I'd love to trade it a little bit more, but I don't have any, you know, scientific proof that buying IPOs and holding them or getting in if you're an accredited investor and selling them that day out there. So I don't know the ticker Chewy. Chewy is up
59. I think we call that flipping them. Don't we call that flipping them?
Yeah.
When you get it in the allotment and then you immediately sell, we call that flipping it, right?
I think a lot of the brokers won't let you sell on the first day because they have, they don't want anybody to sell because they want to drive the price higher. So,
right. And the underwriters don't want to have to put up their own money to support the stock. Okay. With about 15 minutes left, what I was going to do is go over to each person and let's start with Marina. And Marina, let's say in your situation here with the e-mini S&P, because I think that's your primary vehicle, isn't it?
Yeah, it's my daily vehicle.
All right, so your daily vehicle. How about putting something up as far as what we've seen since the opening here for today, and maybe plot some of the things that would have today given you maybe some buy or sell signals, and people can get a little bit of an idea using today as a prototype on how your indicators kind of work.
Okay, I actually was able to figure out how to do my Ameritrade chart for ES, how I actually look at it. So what I'm looking at right now, I've even drawn out the support and the resistance area so I could look at exactly what the range is. So it's less than 10 points, which is what I normally consider a market that I would even want to enter. 10 points to me is just, it's a good amount. Right now we're looking at like 5 points. So it's kind of sitting in between 5 points, really indecisive for my personal point of view. So right now it's kind of going up, but I don't want to say it's 100% because that's not how I work it, but it's going to hit here most likely. It's going to respect that area. It's already been a big double top. It's starting to form a pretty strong resistance area, and then it's going to bounce back. Again, where it goes, not for me to decide, but at the moment, I don't want to really even look at this. So on my daily chart, I would not be anywhere near this as far as attractive entry or short or long, either one.
So yeah, today's action, there's nothing that would have instigated any type of real trading.
No, not at all. Look at this. It's just, I mean, this is today's market right now. It's just bouncing back and forth between 5 points. For me, that's just too risky. It's just not worth it. Because look at this. There's all this indecision here. Right now, it's kind of bouncing up. I don't trust it. It's not worth it for me. That would be too stressful. So on my own personal viewpoint, no, I would be sitting out. This is a day that I would just probably enjoy watching the market.
I got you. And you would prefer to have a larger trading range if possible, and one that's more directional?
Yeah. So if I look at sideways markets, which is what we're looking at, technically a channeling market, I really prefer 10 or more points between. It gives you more micro trends, micro movements in between. I'll be honest with you, this is not, TOS is not my number one, like I said, NinjaTrader is, and I tried to put in the EMA line. I use the 52-week EMA line. That's my range that I'm looking at, and I couldn't do it. I lost my whole chart. So I don't have that particular indicator to show, but the MACDs are really beautiful for me to watch. I would definitely I wouldn't even touch it. Like right here, this is my other area that I'm also really watching, this other support area. If I didn't have this mess happening here, I would consider it, but it's just been too messy between these two. 2 points. Sure. So yeah, this
I got you.
Sometimes you have to do that.
a little bit wider range and a little bit more directional, so you don't get chopped up.
Yeah, exactly. It's too choppy.
All right, Michael, what's if you put up a chart either on a 1 day, 5 day, or 10 day basis? Can you give us some idea of how the software would have kicked you in or kicked you out?
Well, of course, again, it's day trading, so 1, 5, or more days isn't relevant to us.
Okay, so one day would be good.
This is today, and yeah, as current as you're going to get. I'm going to maximize this 9-minute chart, and this is today's open. As you can see, the bars are heading higher, but our proprietary indicator is letting us know we are in an uptrend and had been since, you know, Friday. So with that being said, as of the time, 8:57 Central, that's Chicago time, the 3-minute was also in an uptrend as of on its last bar at 8:54 uptrend. So you're starting to see trend agreement. You got a lot of wind at your back. You want to swing for the fences. Here's the 1 minute. It's also in an uptrend. So when I have that much trend agreement, this dictates the type of exit strategy I'm going to pre-select before I ever get what's called a setup for a trade. If I didn't have much, as I said earlier, I would lean towards a scalp. Actually, lean is the wrong word. It's a metrically based, rules-based Boolean logic system. So in this case, with this much agreement, I would want to scale out. So I'm going to use this tick chart as an example. This is a 233 tick chart. This is the setup bar. The time on this is 8:51 and 15 seconds. All these horizontal lines are just support and resistance levels. That's from a 135 minute chart. These are other time frames that are smaller. So at this point in time, if you look down in the data box right here, you're going to see the risk per contract is $75. That's all we're risking. I use variable logical stops instead of a one size fits all. If the range of the bar is bigger, the risk is bigger, up to a maximum of $100. So this was a much smaller risk. So we would have entered with a stop limit order a tick above that bar, and this is what you would have had. You would have entered 3 bars later through the stop limit order. You'd have scaled out of half of your position. Say if you entered with 4 contracts, you would have ended up scaling out at about $100. That's actually the target. And then your stop would have automatically been moved beforehand with an algorithm to break even plus one tick of profit above where you entered. So that would have hedged your bet even before you scaled out. After you had scaled out, you've got a paid for position. You would then want to trail your stop using this indicator, the blue dots. It would associate in NinjaTrader automatically. So watch what happens. Follow the blue dots and you would still be in this trade until right here at about 8:56. So that trade didn't last terribly a long time, maybe 5 minutes, but you made around $300 or
$400. I got you. I see. So that's a good example of how the software could work for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn over real quick to Andrew. And Andrew, do you have any chart up there that you could put and explain where your buy and sell signals might have come?
Yeah. So I do something which is pretty different than anybody else. So I watch institutional order flow in the option market. So this scanner here on the left is called Trade Alert. We don't own the software. I license it out. And it shows me every trade from every exchange on every option. So if you're trading stock futures or Forex, I think it's very challenging because there's so much algorithm trading. It's like 90 to 95% of all trading in stock is algorithm based. And the S&P is the most algorithm based product there is in the world. There's literally like algo wars between Citadel and Goldman and Merrill and Morgan and Barclays. So this scanner is what I watch during the day. It probably spits out 8 to 1200 trades. And then I try to figure out what institution is putting money on. And then we actually license, like I said, I put in a criteria field based on my trading of all these signals. And this today produced 3-6 signals. So for example, this one in CLDR this morning, some trader somewhere in the world, we never know who he is. They came in and bought 5,000 CLDR next week, 5.5 calls. They paid 35 cents for these. So I bought these for 35. I got out at 50 in US Steel today. Somebody somewhere in the world, we don't know who it is, or stock position, came in and bought 6,000 US Steel July 16th for 15 cents. I took these from 15 to 25. That's in, you know, 67% gain. So options are a magnified ROI on investment. You can lose all your money when the stock doesn't move, but when it does move, you're going to get a better return on investment. Not one more. I'll show you that. It's FOLD. Some trader, we don't know who this trader is, bought about 5,000 FOLD July 13th. I mean, 5,000 and 50 cents. It's about a $250,000 bet. And it also controls about 500,000 shares of stock.
we see it only trades about 2.5 million shares in a day. This is very similar, if you watch CNBC, to the Nigerians, Pete and John trading on the trading floor. I traded on the trading floor. Me and Pete and John talk about it all the time. We're kind of watching the same thing, and right. This is my way of trading. I've been trading like this for 16 years.
Right. And exactly. I've heard of this type of way of going about it. The only problem is you don't know why the guy put on the trade. Is he replacing something? Is he hedging something or something like that? But you found over the years that on a probability basis, it does help your probabilities.
Well, it's got its flaws as well. I mean, with an option, you know, I can show you examples over the last year when options gone from $1 to $7 and 50 cents to $10. But you might have like your win rate as a percentage is going to be very low. So, you know, if I have five trades and I lose $1,000, $1,000, $1,000, $1,000, I'm down $4,000, and then trade five hits for $10,000, my win rate as a percentage is only 20%, but I'm on money. So
is that pretty much the way the math works? In other words, following the order flow may not be a 90% winner, but if you're using limited risk options and you're right 20 or 30% of the time, you still could come out way ahead because the winners could really take off for you.
Exactly. And this is why this trading style per se is hard and most people don't like it.
Right.
If someone gave me like $10 million or $20 million and they said, Andrew, I want 95% of my trades to be winners, I'd say that's easy. I could just sell a dollar call spread for a penny. The dollar is wrong. I'm going to make money 99% of the time, but I'm not going to be profitable. So, you know, traders should stop thinking about, you know, basically how many percentages of trades are winners. Just have, you know, are you making money on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis?
You're emphasizing the net result over time, not getting this winning percentage thing, because sometimes these trades that win 90% of the time, the 10% they lose wipes out all the tiny profits you ever had.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Listen, we're at the top of the hour, so we're going to go around the horn, and if everyone could just repeat their name and their email address, and if there's any special offers you'd like to give, this would be the time to do it, or any special trade or anything like that. So, Marina, back to you. Just let everybody know again who you are, how to get a hold of you, and if you have anything you want to offer out.
Okay. Well, thank you again, David, for having me on the show. And Jim, you've been a great moderator. My name is Marina, the Trader Chick, and you can find me at thetraderchick.com. I really love to work with beginner traders because there isn't that much information out there to just start to help you get started. And also with futures, ES minis and scalping and just simplifying trading, to be honest with you. I like to keep it super simple, and I don't want to say easy because it's not easy, but you can simplify it. And and if you have any questions, you can find me on thetraderchick.com. Thank you.
Okay, great, Marina. Nice to be with you again. Hey, Michael, could you close it up with it? Your comments?
Let me go ahead and just show you my website. This is daytradesafe.com up here. And if you go there, just go ahead and log in there, and you will get a much better explanation about what this system is capable of doing. It'll go into quite a lot of detail. Plus, you'll have an opportunity to visit with me in person. No hard sell, I promise. I'll just answer your questions. So, and you can personally email me also at mguess, that's M-G-U-E-S-S, at daytradesafe.com. Daytradesafe is all one word. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much, Michael. Over to you, Andrew.
Website's alphashark.com. I don't have any promotions. We don't really do promotions anymore. I've been in the market every day for like 16 years. It is stressful. It's hard. It's tedious. I'm always looking at, I'm going to actually look at Michael's stuff because I'm always interested in backtesting strategies, automating strategies, because I truly believe the wave of the future in trading. We're going to eventually not have doctors because we're going to have Da Vinci as well. Automatic trading is the wave of the future. And if you can have a system that worked historically, and then you start on a small account and it makes money, you just scale it up. And depending on, you know, how big the market is, you can really scale it. I mean, Apple's light volume today. I trade 9 million shares. If I go clip 10,000 shares or 50,000 shares, I can't move a market. So I like the fact of automation, AI technology, robotics in trading. So that's something I'm trying to work on. You can always email me if anybody has any questions about anything. It's andrew@alphashark.com.
Great. Thank you guys for all being here. I'm Jim Kenney, and if you'd like to listen to things that I've got going, it's optionprofessor.com, and you get the link to the weekly podcast where I give you all my views and my observations. And if you have any option questions or strategy questions you want to shoot over, it's optionprofessor@gmail.com. I think we had a pretty good session here today. I think we explained a lot to people, so I'm sure there's great value that they got out of today's broadcast. I'm turning it right now over to David to shut it down, and thanks a lot.
All right, thanks everyone. Yeah, a lot of great information and great discussion. So I'm just going to do a quick reminder for everyone watching. Be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or the show archives. Also, be sure to join us for the next episode of Analyze Your Trade tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. You can always go to timingresearch.com/live to access the live broadcast. And for that one, Michael Filigera and Mike Bassani will be back, and Jim will be moderating again. So be sure to join us for that. And I just want to thank my guests again for today's episode. Marina Villatoro of thetraderchick.com, Michael Guess of daytradesafe.com, Andrew Keene of alphashark.com, and Jim Kenney of optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.